Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Richard Rossi Live. I'm really looking forward to this show today because my guest today, Reba Riley has written a book that's coming out soon. You can pre-order it now at Amazon and at her website, rebariley.com. And the book is about a term that I heard from her. It's the first time I heard it, post-traumatic church syndrome. And it just hit the bullseye for me because I know a lot of people that have been, you know, victims of religious abuse, legalism in religion that has really ended up traumatizing, controlling their lives. I have a good friend, a psychologist friend, who's been treating people, Marlene Winnell, who are recovering from fundamentalism and things like that. That's her whole practice pretty much. So it just hit the bullseye the first time I heard it. I was down in North Carolina at the Wild Goose Festival recently showing my film Baseball's Last Hero, 21 Clemente Stories. And Wild Goose Festival is like a Woodstock for progressive Christians. And Reba was talking about this. This is her first book. It's going to be a, you know, a big hit. The pre-orders are doing great. And she was talking about this, and I took it as such a great, you know, description. Some of you may almost chuckle at post-traumatic church syndrome and think, well, that's kind of an oxymoron. Church is supposed to heal us and help us and not hurt us. But unfortunately, people do go to the church to get healed and end up getting hurt. And so Reba's journey, which she'll tell you about in a half a minute here when I bring her on, is that she decided to break away from a very fundamentalist upbringing and think for herself and explore the larger world. And she wanted to visit 30 different religions before she turned 30. And she's going to be back with us in about 30 seconds to share what she learned on her journey. So don't go anywhere. This is going to be a very fascinating half hour here. I'll be back with Reba shortly. Welcome, Reba. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me today, Richard.
You're welcome. Well, just the name I know is such a grabber and probably provokes different reactions. So tell us, you know, what's post-traumatic church syndrome?
So post-traumatic church syndrome is the term that I came up with to describe spiritual injury. Because we talk a lot about, you know, physical health, thankfully, and we talk about mental health. But what I'm talking about with post-traumatic church syndrome is spiritual health. And it's sort of the third leg of that bar stool of our lives, if you will, that gets lost. And it's important to me to have this term, or it was very important to me to have this term, because I didn't have a way to talk about my spiritual injuries that was easily understood. And I know a lot of people feel that way. And I started using this term, post-traumatic church syndrome, when I was 22, I'm 32 now, so about a decade ago. And as I used it, I found out there were about two reactions that I would get. One would be, oh, my God, I have that. And the other would be sort of a tongue-in-cheek laugh. But either way, it was an attention-grabbing term that communicated in four words what I couldn't communicate in four pages if I was, you know, talking. Mm-hmm. And so I think the term itself has sort of taken on its own life since I put it out there in the world. I had an article titled Post-Traumatic Church Syndrome that went viral in March. And since then, I've just been hearing from people all over saying, thank you for this term. You know, thank you for giving me some words to be able to talk about it. Because sometimes naming something can be the first step to healing. Being able to put a frame around it can be the first step.
Well, I know a lot of people there in North Carolina where we were recently had the reaction of, aha, that's it, because right after you were speaking, my cameraman Jeff and I went to one of the taverns down in Asheville. I think it was called the Iron Horse or something. I can't even remember now. And people were talking about it there in the bar. I was overhearing people. We were having lunch there, and they were talking about, wow, she really put her finger on it. I'm not crazy. I remember a girl that got up to sing on the guitar, singer-songwriter, said, wow, I'm so grateful someone put a name on my experience. So there was ripple effects right after you were done about the name.
Well, yeah, naming is powerful. And I have firsthand experience with that from a physical perspective because I was very ill for about 8 years and progressively got worse, and I couldn't get an answer. I didn't have a diagnosis. I couldn't get a name for what was wrong with me. And not having that was almost worse sometimes than later finding out what I did have. Once I had a diagnosis, once I had a name to put to my physical illness, I was able to find people who had been through it. I was able to find support. I was able to, get treated and eventually get better. And so I kind of use that as an analogy. If we're dealing with spiritual health, if we have a name to put around this certain set of experiences that many of us have had, but we didn't have a way to talk about it, that's how we find each other, and that's how we help each other, and that's how we get well.
Yeah, my dad, my late father, he had post-traumatic stress disorder from the Korean War, and so the term really works for me so well because certain things could trigger a bad memory, and he would go into, physical reactions and just be out of the present and have some great difficulty. And in your story, and forgive me if I jump around, I'm going to be a little ADD in the chronology of your story, but I think one of the best examples I heard when you were talking was how you were in one of the churches where he put the guilt trip on you about the blood on your hands and if you don't invite people to this church. Could you share that story? Because I think that's a good example where a religious setting started to trigger physical reaction in your body, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have had, multiple experiences like that. But the one that you're talking about, I was in a mega church. And I was about midway through my 30 religions project, and I was healing up. I mean, I was getting there. And then I walk into this service, and the guy is just yelling and screaming, and he is just so angry, angry. He looks like the world's angriest Oompa Loompa, just stomping around on the stage. And he said, take out a paper and pen. So of course, everyone obediently does that. Not me, but everybody else did. He said, write down the name of 10 people that you love. And he, gave you time to do that and let you look at it and said, if you do not invite these people to church or make sure that they have accepted Jesus, they will go to hell and their blood will be on your hands.
Mm.
And I had to leave. I mean, I went to the bathroom and I actually threw up. Because it triggered something so deep in me, the spiritual injury, that all I was hearing was this guilt, this shame, the spiritual guilt and shame that had been put on me because I didn't do whatever, the church had said I was supposed to do. And so, I'm sure that there are people who would say, well, that's just, you were dealing with mental illness there. You're having a some sort of reaction. But to me, I look at it and say, like, this was a spiritual injury, and I had to deal with it in a spiritual way. And that's what I was doing there, unfortunately. Exposure therapy.
Yeah, exactly. I think, by the way, you can pre-order Reba's book. I've read the whole book, and it's fantastic at Reba Riley. rebariley.com, or I think at Amazon you can pre-order Post-Traumatic Church Syndrome. But I guess since the audience doesn't know too much of your background, I'm making the mental connection of why that triggered you knowing. But you're just such a good writer and make us kind of smile as we read about your childhood and how the Smurfs were considered demonic and all that. But since the listeners may not know what, growing up was like for you in It was a pretty, it seems to me it was pretty fear-based, wasn't it? That they were kind of seeing Satan in a lot of places.
Oh, Satan was everywhere. He was possibly hiding under my bed. He may still be hiding under my bed. we were Pentecostal-leaning, so, demons were kind of behind every bush, and everything was possibly suspect for satanic influence. That said, I had what I would consider, it really was a wonderful childhood. I have wonderful parents who were doing the very best that they could with what they had. But as far as the religion went, it wasn't part of our life. It was our life. Mm-hmm. And that's where the breakdown occurs later, because I was told my entire life that you don't build your identity anywhere except in Christ. Build your identity in Christ. And I did that. And then I found out that I didn't believe all these things that I had been told about Christ, and the bottom fell out of my world. And that is the issue when you build your life, you know, around something, when it's the gravity of your life and you lose it, that's when you lose yourself, and that's when you lose the spiritual injury occurs. So, you know, just some funny examples. The Smurfs were considered demonic. You know, I always hoped that I would be fall down in the spirit, because everybody was always falling down in the spirit. Unfortunately, I never could. But, I mean, I was speaking in tongues when I was 5 years old, and I was all in. So it was definitely an interesting childhood.
Yeah, I remember you talked about telling the kids at school that instead of we shouldn't play, we should pray. Praying is better than playing, or something like that.
Yes, right? I did. I organized prayer meetings at recess. It was totally my heart. And mm-hmm. the amazing thing about, you know, now looking back, now that I'm healed up, I was encouraged to have a depth of spirituality, whereas, you know, a lot of children may not be, and I was encouraged mm-hmm. in that. And so that's the good part of it. So I try to, you know, focus on the good now, but it was a long road to be able to see what is good out of the bad.
Yeah, I certainly don't want to give any spoilers, but you know, I think your story, the finishing of the project reminds me. I think it was a T.S. Eliot quote about we come to the beginning of our journey and we know it in a new way, you know, for the first time, and that's the end of our road, you know. And I felt it was so powerful when you went back to, you know, the little Pentecostal church, and you went there and you were able to not be traumatized by it and kind of glean the good and kind of put it in a new context. And you've decided to visit these 30, you know, religions before you turn 30. And we're probably in 30 minutes here. We probably don't even have time to cover. It's just people are going to have to get this great book. But I love the permission slip that you give out. I've noticed you have a permission slip that you give people that have felt injured in the name of religion. It says, I, Reba, give you permission to redefine
give
any word
permission.
Or phrase. What was that?
Yeah, give yourself permission. Yeah, I, Reba Riley, give you, fill in the blank, permission to mm-hmm. redefine anything that anyone ever told you about faith or God.
Mm-hmm.
And the important part of that permission slip is not, you know, me saying I'm giving you permission. It's below the line where you know, the person who's filling it out writes in what they're giving themselves permission to do or to think or to redefine. Because within religion, we're typically taught, you know, to take definitions wholesale. However they're given mm-hmm. to us, that's how we take them and use them. And that can be very damaging because we don't have any freedom of thought. And so mm-hmm. Basically what I had to do to go on my journey was give myself permission to let go of all of that mm-hmm. and move forward and define things like God and mercy and love and all these different things, heaven, for myself.
Mm-hmm. I love how these concepts you know, it's like Corinthians talks about when I was a child, I thought and spoke as a child, but when I became mature, I put away the childish things. It's like your journey to me was when you revisited the old terms, the old places, you had such a more mature understanding. Like you mentioned mercy a second ago.
Yeah.
I noticed that word went from, you know, God is going to smite and smote you, but he's in a good mood today. He's going to give you a break, and that was your old mercy, and then it became something much more richer, the grace kind of with you 24/7. That was a big switch in that word for you, wasn't it?
It was. I used to think of mercy as this idea of this, you know, angry God who's, like you said, in a good mood, so he's not going to squish me on the bottom of his holy sneaker today. And that's
yeah.
mercy. And what I redefined it as was when my husband and I got married, the pastor invited everyone that we love to stand up, and he said, will you support this union? Mm-hmm. And they all stood up and they said, we will. And now when I think of mercy, that's what I think of. I think of the entire Godiverse, which is, we'll go back to that in a second, surrounding me and helping me along in this crazy thing called life. That is what I feel for mercy now. And I think, you know, redefining terms, giving yourself permission to do it is a huge part of healing.
Yeah, you really went out to form your own identity, since you said at the outset, you know, you weren't able to form your own identity. You were told what to think. And now you went out on this journey and you formed your own identity. And you begin to think for yourself, and you had so much courage. I love the courage that you showed. One of the things that hit me really strong was the conversation with your mom. And I think a lot of our evangelical listeners might think this thought of, well, gee, why do you have to visit these other churches, these other religions, because you have the truth with us? But you responded to your mom of John 8:32, I think, about the truth should set you free. I'm not free. This religion's imprisoning me. And you made this journey. But was there some fear, though? I would think being under that indoctrination where Pentecostalism, because I've preached in the Pentecostal world and know that world, it's very sometimes more Satan-conscious than Savior-conscious. So the thought of, let's say, going to a class on meditation, oh, you're going to open yourself to the demons because the Eastern religions meditate, or if you go to this group, Satan will get you. Was that a tape in your head at all when you went to these other places, or were your evangelical friends warning you, you better not go there or the devil will get you? Did you have to deal with a lot of that?
Well, I do have to say, between the time I walked out of my, walked away from my my religion and when I started exploring, it was about 7 years time. So I had a little bit of a distance from it, but it's amazing when you start putting yourself in that situation, those tapes do play. And I absolutely had those, things in my mind, in my father's voice, my pastor's voice, my mother's voice saying, you're opening yourself up to Satan and who knows what's going to happen. But I remember I had to build an altar to a Hindu goddess as part of the Diwali celebration. And that was the first time that I had really ventured out. I was going to the Hindu temple. And so I built this altar in my house, and I'm telling you, with fear and trepidation, I was trying to tell myself it was okay, while I'm gathering all these things and putting them on an altar. But I couldn't get over the feeling, that I was indoctrinated by, that I was, worshiping an idol or a demon or something. But I did it anyway. I did it anyway, and it turned out to be a great experience.
Well, you went to so many places, the Vineyard, the Mormon Church, the Amish, Native Americans. I'm not even listing the whole list. I know this is probably, I don't know if this is tough to answer, but if you look back on like the whole 30 religions you checked out before you turned 30, and had to name, I don't know, the top five, or maybe if you can't name the top five, people that seemed the most Christ-like, spiritually healthy, spiritually connected. I'd just be curious what, I don't know if you could do that, but it'd be really interesting just to see where they come from, because I would suspect that they would come from different places, and in the evangelical world, we're kind of taught that, okay, we evangelical Christians are the only ones that are connected to God, and everyone else isn't. But if I look back on my own history, some of the most spiritually connected people I know would be evangelical Christians, but several of them would not be. People I've met maybe in recovery, or people I know that are maybe more into meditation and might not, identify as as evangelical Christians, but. To me, it's like a wake-up call that when you said to your mom, look, if we have the truth, then it's not setting me free. I'm certainly not free. And I think when I look back on people I know from my experiences and travels that, if they're the only ones that have the fruit of the Spirit, it certainly evidentially doesn't look that way. But Who are some of the ones that came to the top, you know, came to the top for you in terms of connection spiritually?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is the person who affected me the most throughout the journey, and he is the person that I refer to as the urban monk in my book.
Uh-huh.
He's an Eastern Orthodox monk who has, he lives in this little mission in inner city Columbus, lives there, serves the poor there, runs his own homeless ministry, feeds, I don't even know how many people he feeds every day by himself, runs it on a shoestring. He lives and breathes, you know, love. Mm. And he is the one who I saw what he was doing, and I thought, not just what he was doing, but just who he was. And I thought, this is, maybe religion isn't all bad.
Mm-hmm.
If he's doing this in the name of religion. And when I got to know the urban monk, he said, you know, religion is basically just, it's just an expression of love. Love is the basis of it, or it should be. So the urban monk who taught me to meditate, and he's also simultaneously a Buddhist as well, and he's very active in interfaith work. And for me, that opened my eyes to see that people could be, you know, a Christian monk. The guy has taken vows, but he's also considers himself, you know, to be a Buddhist. And that's the first time I had seen that. So the urban monk would be number one. Chief Hoof Watcher of the Namenha, also still in contact with him. He is very, very connected. And he, I call him the suburban shaman because he lives in the suburbs of Columbus, but he is the head of this tribe of Namenha, and I went through a sweat ceremony with them. And, you know, it's tough running through all those religions in my mind. I feel like in most of the places that I went, if I was looking, I found someone who was spiritually connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the bottom line, is that people can connect through any of these religions, because they're like languages. They're like a language. We're trying to express something that's a lot bigger, and the words that we have may be different. So, you know, the Christianity words and the Hindu words and the Buddhist words, the way that we go at it and what we say is different. But the intention behind it is to reach the divine, to reach something that is so much bigger than we are. And so I found people in each of these places that were reaching and connecting with the divine.
Yeah, it's interesting in your book how there was these periodic times where you felt that, you know, I remember, I think you went to the Vineyard and went forward where they have the hands on prayer, and it seemed like a really powerful, positive thing, and you ended up describing God like a disco ball with the different facets and the light hitting it, and that really is interesting to me because I remember a rabbi once saying that God is like a mirror. The mirror doesn't change, but every single person looking in the mirror sees something different in that mirror. And I think that's been one of the solutions in your journey. And man, that, you know, like Einstein says, time's relative. When we're talking about these interesting things, it just flies by, and we're, you know, running out of time here. But just kind of some of the antidotes or the cures, I think creativity and art's one thing that's, the spirituality of art has been a part of healing for you, hasn't it?
It has. There's, you know, something that even though religion or God and faith was my whole life growing up, it was also in some ways confined. I was never really taught that art could be a medium for connection with God.
Mm-hmm.
And that all these different things, you know, walking in nature and walking a labyrinth and, you know, having you know, a sincere conversation with a friend. These are all ways that we can connect to the divine. It's the ways we can connect to God. And as I started, healing my spirituality, it was amazing that my creativity started healing also and just blooming. And I think, you know, a lot of times, especially in the evangelical world, we do divorce this idea of art and spirituality when really they're very interconnected, because art, at least for me, does come out of my soul, you know, comes out of my spirit. And so to be able to use art, you know, to paint, to dance, to do these things as a way, as a meditative practice, was a big eye-opening experience for me.
Yeah, it's really powerful, too. I know the more I got away from fundamentalism, my creativity just began to soar more and more. Another cure I think that I like a lot that you put out there is the freedom to, you know, create your faith in the sense of not having to buy, you know, a certain man or a certain group's dogma 100%. You don't have to fit into the box or label of somebody else. That seems like a really huge thing that you're helping people to understand.
I hope so, because, you know, it's an interesting kind of paradox, because everybody wants to know, you went to 30 religions, what did you pick?
Right.
And I almost want to laugh, because that wasn't the point. And I almost feel like if I did pick one, it would defeat the purpose of the journey. And so my answer is really, you know, I chose them all and I chose them none. There are things from all of these places that I've taken and I've incorporated into my faith, but my faith doesn't look, it doesn't fit into a box with a pre-printed label. And I guess my message to other people is, yours doesn't have to either. It doesn't have to have an easy label, and it doesn't have to be easy to explain. As long as it works for you, that's the important thing. As long as you can be healed and whole and peaceful and connecting to God and yourself the way that you desire to, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, taking what works for you. And your critical thinking, too. You were able to go to these different places and very humorously sometimes, you know, kind of really test their claims and test what they were putting out. Whereas as a kid, you just take what people tell you. But thinking for yourself and the critical thinking seems to have been a big part, too, when I was reading the book.
I think, giving yourself the space, again, that kind of comes back to the redefining and the giving yourself permission. Mm-hmm. If you can step back from it and use it as it's like a laboratory. Like, does this work for you or doesn't? Is it helping you move closer to the light or isn't it? And if it is, then incorporate it into your life. And if it's not, then let it go, because the real purpose here is that we're trying to move into love and light. And whatever is helping you get there is the right vehicle for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and those of you listening, you know, we really don't have time to do this journey justice, you know, and so I would encourage you to pre-order Reba's book at RebaRiley.com, or go to, I think, Amazon if you put in post-traumatic syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can see she really goes into detail. Oh, there's so much I wish we could talk about, but, I mean, everything from getting kicked out of one of the famous mega churches an intern program, because you started to question things and, you know, the Native American, the Amish, I mean, all the different places you went, you talk about these experiences. And I see this could be a great, you know, series, TV series, like a PBS series or even a hipper kind of MTV series. But the journeying around the country and seeing the different religious expressions, I think it would be a fascinating, fascinating TV program.
You know, I really hope that I get the opportunity to do that, and I'm pursuing several opportunities right now as far as the dramatic rights go, because, you know, I wrote this book, I've poured my heart and soul into it, but my real passion is about healing. It's about spiritual healing, and it's about coming alongside people who are in the place that I was in, spiritual injury, or maybe they're just confused, or maybe they just, you know, they don't know where to turn, and saying, like, you can get from where you are to where you want to be. That is my hope, you know, to be a bridge. And my story is just one story, but I hope that when people read it or maybe potentially see it on TV or in a movie, that it gives them permission to live their own story. Mm. Because we all are on a journey, and sometimes we just need to see, you know, somebody who's been through something to inspire us to, you know, take another step. And so that's who I wrote the book for. I wrote the book for, for people who are in that place.
I can't believe we're out of time. I'm going to, get a moment's grace from Blog Talk Radio and go just a moment over, because I love I love kind of the journey coming back to your childhood Pentecostal church, and your husband was funny too. How he was like, "Man, these people are bad. These people are nuts, man. I could see why you were damaged by this." You know, I just, it's kind of funny how you brought him along to the too. But could I know I don't want you to spoil anything in terms of the ending. You don't want to, but maybe we could end with your end and how, whatever you feel comfortable saying about your return to the childhood church and what that was like.
Well, I think it's important for people to know that almost inadvertently, I started the journey at the church of my childhood, which I would not recommend to anyone else doing this, but I did that. And then I came back a year later on Pentecost mm-hmm. Sunday, a year apart, and I did bring my husband. And the church was the same, the service was the same, but I was different.
Mm.
I wasn't angry. I could reach into this, you know, ritual that they're doing, whether they would call it a ritual or not, you know, this worship and this, you know, some of it's a little crazy. But I could see that they're all just doing their best. Everybody is doing their best to try to get to God.
Mm-hmm.
And once I could strip away the kind of craziness of what they were doing and see that intention, I could see how beautiful it was. It's
well,
not saying everything
powerful.
You're doing is right. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's not. I'm not saying, and you don't have to, you know, put up with everything that people do, but if you can remove yourself a little bit just to see that what they're trying to do is reach God.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is the, you know, the conclusion from going back to the church. But my ultimate, you know, at the end, I basically say that being broken is a beautiful thing. And it
yes.
doesn't feel like it in the moment, but being broken is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for light and love to come through where there wasn't, you know, there are cracks there where love and light can shine through, where there wasn't opportunity before. And it's through the brokenness that that we have this bridge to become, you know, from the person we are to the person that we are going to become. And so I would like to encourage anyone who is out there who is dealing with brokenness, whether it's spiritual brokenness, you know, maybe it's the heartbreak of a relationship, but being broken really is, it really is beautiful because it's through that that you will become who you're going to be.
Well, thank you so much for your honesty about the brokenness you went through, the physical suffering that you went through. It's all in this book so well, and I can't think of a better book that fleshes out the one of my favorite lyrics by Leonard Cohen about what you just said about the crack in a bell lets the light come through, and this is the best story I've read to show that, and I think you've kind of proven that scripture about if I glory in my weakness and my brokenness, the power of grace rests upon me, and thanks for sharing that with us. It's been a great journey to share your journey. And check out RebaRiley.com. And how can they be a part of the post-traumatic church syndrome community that you're facilitating?
Well, I have a blog on Pathios, post-traumatic church syndrome, at Pathios.com. And from there, you can reach, you can contact me via email. You can connect with me through Facebook. On Facebook is where we have our post-traumatic church syndrome community. If you're part of Facebook, you can search post-traumatic church syndrome, and it'll come up. There's about 5,000 members. And you can just request membership, and we'll add you. It's just a forum for talking about healing. You know, how do we get from where we are to where we want to be? And my focus, by the way, is very healing. I'm not here to talk about, like, what went wrong. I'm here to talk about how do we move from where we are to where we want to be. And they can reach out to me through Facebook or through my blog or send me an email.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Reba, and all the best to you and Trent.
Thank you so much, Richard. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And thank you to all of you for listening in. What a powerful woman that Reba is in making this journey. And love to you all, and look forward to seeing you next time.